Hello, and welcome to Databook, a podcast presented by Chief Healthcare Executive. I'm Ron Southwick, Senior Editor of Chief Healthcare Executive. With Databook, we talk to healthcare leaders about technology, innovation, and the transformation of healthcare. Thank you so much for joining us. We'll get started in just a moment. In this episode, we talk with Justin Norton, who discusses the emergence of ChatGPT and what it means for healthcare. Justin's a physician who teaches about digital health at Stanford Medicine. He's also a partner at GSR Ventures, an investment firm focusing on early-stage digital health companies. In this conversation, he talks about how AI is going to eventually touch every part of the healthcare journey. Well, thank you for joining us. We are talking today with Justin Norton, who teaches about digital health at Stanford Medicine. He's also a partner at GSR Ventures, an investment firm focusing on early-stage digital health companies. Justin, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon.
Ron, thanks so much for having me on.
You have a very interesting background. So before we dive in, could you just talk a little bit about your background? Because I think you've got a pretty interesting backstory.
Sure. So I'll go back to the beginning. I grew up in Seattle, and that's relevant because I grew up in a family of physicians, but also kind of under the shadow of Microsoft, and kind of that as a bar for what technology means and what scale means. So fast forward a bit, I studied computer science as an undergrad. I did a master's in computational biology, focused on machine learning, and then came to Stanford, where being a doctor was kind of always the plan. That's where things started to tweak. I came in with this background as a data scientist, as a technologist, and fundamentally, wrote my personal statements about how can we merge technology and medicine? How can we merge technology and healthcare to advance what we were doing? Even at a place like Stanford, it was still early days to make that happen. But I found everyone who was kind of doing anything like that. So I jumped out a few times from clinical training. We started a Center for Digital Health, doing some of the first telemedicine visits out of Epic. We were evaluating technologies to use in the hospital. Jumped over to a team at Apple, where we were kind of building those technologies, seeing what that looks like at scale. You can't spend that long in Silicon Valley without starting a few companies of your own. And so one basically went nowhere, but another one around algorithm safety and trust, we ended up selling to Waymo, Google's autonomous vehicle company. And kind of with that background, ended up meeting the team at GSR Ventures, where it was a team of physicians with backgrounds in technology and startups who had a similar vision to myself of how can we merge technology and healthcare. And so I've been at GSR Ventures for almost 4 years now. Focusing on early stage companies and investments in healthcare technology. On along that path, found I had to kind of go back to Stanford. So as you mentioned, still teach on digital health and what that looks like as an adjunct professor in the Department of Biomedical Informatics.
Well, it sounds like you are the perfect person to talk about one of the hottest trends anywhere in terms of not just technology, but just one of the hottest topics anywhere, ChatGPT, which is being getting all kinds of attention, including mainstream media. And I wanted to ask about it in terms of the implications for healthcare. So could you talk about what this means for healthcare?
That is the million, if not billion-dollar question. And I think it means a number of things. So since ChatGPT and before has come out, generative AI, the broader category has been something we've certainly been focused on and looking at GSR Ventures, and then myself personally. We had starting with generative AI, we started with lots of images and videos and songs and ChatGPT, when it launched, really was the first truly mainstream version of this generative AI application that hit the fastest growing kind of consumer technology product ever, reaching 100 million users. Even actually, I saw a Colbert, Stephen Colbert had a seg or no, a John Oliver had a segment recently that was on ChatGPT and generative AI, and so it really has reached mainstream media. But what does this actually mean? Like, what does it mean for healthcare? What does it look like? We've had technology and it's kind of picked apart different aspects of healthcare over time. But one of the things I think that will change is what is the diagnostic journey that patients will take and that people will take as they're kind of entering the healthcare system, as something I think is going to be impacted, already has been impacted by ChatGPT, despite the fact that these companies don't want to say, don't use this for symptom triage, don't use this for these things. But I think We're going to find out that it already has been, and we're going to see some of the implications of that, both for better and for worse, you know, over the coming months. And so one of the things I think about is, how has things like Google search? Google search has already changed the patient journey, right? Every patient's Googling their symptoms, getting scared about, you know, night sweats, weight loss, something like that, thinking they might go down, you know, an oncology care pathway when they might not. And as physicians, we're already seeing patients come in now with a different preconception, right, of what they might have, what they might want, what that looks like. So that has already changed. And I think one of the implications I think that's coming is ChatGPT and these tools are going to take that a step further. You know, should this be regulated? Is it an FDA approved device? We could, you know, have that debate. It's not supposed to be, but what if people use it instead for that path? But, you know, that patient journey is something I'm really keeping an eye on.
What about for providers or even researchers? What are the promising implications of ChatGPT?
So many implications for providers and resources. So let's start with providers first, then we'll get to researchers in a second. One of the really exciting things about this technology is, can we do better at age-old problems? And I think the answer is yes. So for years, right, providers have been plagued by writing notes, summaries, you know, claims for insurance, you know, prior auth denials, et cetera. And these are all things that really can be helped. And there's already startups today, you know, working at them and now incorporating these large language models to make them better. So let's take, you know, note writing. You know, this is something that, you know, we've had Nuance and Dragon for years and years and years, far prior to the Microsoft acquisition, where, hey, can we do dictation? Can we have a human in the loop to kind of summarize and write the start of a note for you? Is that close? And then, you know, how can you use that in your practice? These things are getting automated, and some of the demos and things I'm seeing today are far, far better than what they were before. So we are finally getting there. We've been promised it for years, but we're finally getting there towards kind of automated note summaries, recap from patient encounters, what that looks like. So on this whole kind of provider operations level, so not the clinical decision-making, these tools are in some cases able to be live today, from note writing to thinking about billing to, you know, you've seen the Doximity notes probably for kind of sending your you know, letters, right, to your payer to get authorization or a denial that's come back to appeal that. All of these kind of ancillary tools around clinical care, we're starting to see LLMs kind of impact what's going on. To answer your second question on research, and I don't want to go on too long, but in research, there's amazing things been happening in terms of kind of summarization. So I was speaking with a company a few days ago, a company called Cite, that is trying to say, hey, how can we look at all of the medical literature and start to kind of assign scores to which papers are getting cited using natural language to say, this is saying for something, this is saying against something, you know, this is just kind of mentioning it in context. And especially with, you know, ever increasing amounts of medical literature coming out in journals over time, how can we synthesize and kind of reduce the noise and point people in the right directions? And so these are going to be amazing tools for researchers to kind of move science a lot faster, summarize science, stay up to date. And I think we're just scratching the surface of what people are really doing there.
It's just really funny to be talking about, you know, the use of AI and sort of note taking or other forms of writing and research stuff. And you're also dealing with the healthcare industry where you're still using the fax a lot to deal with prior authorization requests. So there's a strange dichotomy here.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, this is something, you know, I talk about in the course at Stanford is, you know, if you look back, yes, technology is getting better and better. And like healthcare actually has implemented certain things. You know, we've implemented the EMR. You know, we saw telemedicine adoption, you know, go up a crazy amount. But what's interesting is the pace of adoption is far slower than the pace of the technology getting adopted. So in my mind, the gap is actually far widening between where we're at today with technology and then where we're at in healthcare. And that pace is only going to accelerate. And that's what we're starting to see with what's happened just over the past 6 months in generative AI research and uptake. And so healthcare in my mind is going to have to move faster. It's no longer, you know, we can sit back, this is the way we've always done it. Technology is kind of one thing that's really starting to push push the seams of what's possible, saying, hey, we can't accept fax. Maybe we will accept faxes for another century. Who knows? But at some point, right, the capabilities of what we're able to do with these models compared to where we're at today is going to break. And then on the flip side, you know, in the past couple of weeks, we see Amazon completing their acquisition of One Medical, which, you know, I'd be super curious to know how many signups there were, because One Medical is now the first tab on the Amazon homepage. It is the first thing that is shown there to people. You know, we have that on one side. We have Walmart expanding with their clinics and what they're doing. So these, the technology is kind of coming in, getting ready. These corporations are, these giant corporations are coming in a way that we've yet to see in healthcare with new tools. And so these things are coming in. I think we're going to have to change if we want to stay relevant.
Do you see healthcare leaders being more willing to make change and embrace technology more, either out of necessity due to competition from other rivals like Amazon or Walmart, or even just out of the necessity of staffing because they just don't have enough bodies to fill the staffing needs they have?
I would say the latter is a far more pressing need, you know, and I think, you know, healthcare, there's many good reasons why healthcare is slow to change, right? We do, you know, want, there's an incredibly important service that we're providing. We can't disrupt that in any way. There is a different risk tolerance, you know, for what you need to do to make sure your patient care is amazing for what you're doing. And in terms of kind of forces thinking about adoption for technology, I don't think, for at least from my conversations, people aren't as worried about the Amazons and Walmart. If you're an academic medical system or a hospital, you're much more worried about staffing and your acute issues. And we're starting to see, you know, staffing being, you know, for many people, a number one issue for what's going on. And this is an area where technology can and should be able to help. So whether it's things like, you know, telenursing solutions, augmenting, you know, clinical staff more with AI, again, you know, maybe if you're able to, you know, change the ratios of what, where you need on a ward or a floor, you know, be able to provide, you know, support at a distance rather than having someone to come in. You know, how can we support our providers better with these tools when historically technology is often, providers would say, made their lives a lot worse. And these things really are possible today. And so this is where I would say that there's a lot of focus from health systems on, you know, how can we aid providers with this technology, given this kind of incredible shortage that we have today.
I wanted to ask an AI question related to consumers, because there was a really interesting Pew Research Center study that showed 6 out of 10 patients said they wouldn't be comfortable if their doctor was using AI in either diagnosing a problem or coming up with a treatment plan. What do you think that says about consumer behavior, and what does that mean for the industry?
I saw that study, and I think it's fascinating. A number of things. One, I think there's a lot of education to go. So it's funny when you ask, you know, I'd be curious to see, I didn't see the data on providers and like what they would pick, but from a, you know, for myself, getting a second check with AI sounds amazing, right? Just to get an immediate second opinion, an immediate, you know, feedback, a double read on my imaging to make sure there's not a nodule there or something missed. That seems amazing because I've seen the mistakes happen. I know what that's like. And it's not because of any good intention, but it's because there's thousands of things going on. And so, you know, I think to me, that's kind of a gap between how familiar, how comfortable are consumers with the healthcare market? Because healthcare is scary. No one wants to deal with healthcare until they get sick and have to run into the hospital. And, you know, I think once you get in the inside and spend more time in the hospital, you realize, oh my gosh, the hospital is the last place I want to go. I want to stay out of the hospital as far as I can for as long as I can and make sure, you know, that's what's going to keep me healthiest. And so I think it's a gap between a little bit of expectations of how care works and how perfect or not perfect it is. And so I think my assumption is that will change. So when we have this conversation in 2 or 3 years, I expect that will look different. But in the meantime, I think it's really important to for everyone to realize how important patients still place on the diagnostic journey with their clinician and, you know, how important that relationship is to them. And, you know, there's other data saying, you know, clinicians are still the number one person where consumers feel comfortable sharing their healthcare data. And, you know, on the other end of the spectrum is employers and big tech. And so, you know, my view is that, you know, clinicians and health systems have this incredibly important role to play with consumers. And I think over time, everyone will be more comfortable adding in a little bit of AI and support into the mix. But humans are going to be a central part from both sides on the diagnostic journey, you know, for years and years to come.
Which also, I guess, leads in that big picture question. Do you see at some point, even if it's not today or 5 years from now, a point where some of these AI-enabled technologies replace people in healthcare, or are they just going to be supplementing healthcare providers in doing their job better?
So replace providers, I think the answer is no. You know, as again, that consumer sentiment and just looking forward, you know, so much of what we want in healthcare, it's not, so I'm just going to, the getting to the right decision is a fraction of your care journey. I think people kind of overweight sometimes. Oh my gosh, what's the diagnosis? You know, I studied so long in medical school to get this right. Oftentimes, most of your patient encounters start with a diagnosis. You start there, and then you have to figure out, well, okay, well, given your diabetes and hypertension and your three kids and two jobs, how can we do something that helps you, the patient, in your current life circumstances to get you the best outcomes today? So the correct diagnosis is actually just a fraction of kind of what someone's healthcare journey is. And, you know, whether an AI can offer a suggestions for all of those other kind of comorbidities and conditions too, it's possible, but really it's going to be, you know, that guidance and trust between a clinician and a patient is going to be essential for actually getting to the healthcare outcomes. And so, you know, that is true today and it's true tomorrow with whatever kind of AI support we have. And so I really don't think, you know, AI is going to be replacing clinicians really in kind of decades to come. It is going to change the job considerably. And you know, it will change maybe who gets seen when, you know, how triage happens. It will change potentially ratios or in certain places for how many patients one person might be able to see, how time gets allocated to deal with those patients. AI is going to touch, I think, every part of the healthcare journey in the near future in some cases, but it's really not going to be replacing clinicians. The one avenue, maybe not to be too controversial, maybe where it will start to replace things is we cannot continue to have the administrative burden increasing at the pace it has in our healthcare system. You know, healthcare, right, has been, you know, the number one source of job growth. And, you know, we've added, you know, far more administrative positions over the past few years than clinical positions and direct patient facing care positions. So those areas, I think, are far more prone to kind of automation than directly facing patient care experiences.
And I'm starting to hear more health organizations say that they want to lift some of that administrative burden from their clinicians and even some of their support staff, so they can focus on patients that really need extra help and navigation and not just, you know, simple scheduling or just simple other tasks that really could be done through technology. So talking about ChatGPT, I meant to ask you this before. I've been seeing some scientific journals weighing the question of how it should be used in journal articles. A couple of journals have said that they don't think it's appropriate to credit ChatGPT as a co-author, but they're more willing to accept it if it's used in the writing or research questions, as long as it's at least disclosed that it was the researcher was using it in the assistance. What do you think of that? Is that an appropriate safeguard, or is that going too far? What do you think?
So I've seen opinions all over the place from journals. So let's start with some background. So what has already happened? We've already had ChatGPT, let's call it, fabricate an entire article with an entirely made up team, submit it and get it accepted. That's part of background that's relevant. You know, we've also had articles citing ChatGPT as an author because ChatGPT, you know, passed the boards, you know, and, you know, was partially contributing those to the writing or other parts of the manuscript. And so those are just a kind of a few data points to think about. So let's start with the first one. That is existential. You know, there are issues, and we don't need to dive into it, on peer review, what it means, the whole, you know, journal industry, what preprints do to that. There are issues there, and ChatGPT is going to make all of those much, much worse. and it already has. The bar to create an article or what looks like an article is on the floor. And anyone can do that today, you know, in minutes to create something that looks credible, even though nothing might be under the hood. And that really is existential for the industry. And so I think there's some reactions from journals saying, can't touch it in any way, ban this, get this out, you know, don't deal with this. And on the other hand, it's like, yeah, this is an amazing tool to allow amazing scientists to, in some cases of writing, do work faster. You know, academic scientists for years have had support writing papers. And if they have bigger grants, then they can have more support doing that. And now ChatGPT as a tool allows scientists with less big budgets to get help with writing, get their ideas out. And so there's lots of different approaches in thinking of how ChatGPT can be used. And so I'm very curious to see where things go. I personally lean on the end of, yeah, it's an amazing writing tool, but it scares me if it's not checked what the output is. Because are we accidentally writing incorrect things? Are we hallucinating, which ChatGPT tends to do, you know, wrong references or wrong ideas or facts? And so what I think will happen is we're going to start to get better scientific writing tools. I think we're going to start to get better ones where it gives you exact references. You can see exactly what it looks like. And I think these things should be used. I think it really can advance what happens with our science if we're doing it properly and if we're double checking the work. I think it can really make things go faster. So that's my hope.
Obviously, you're very excited about the potential for AI to improve healthcare. Is there any ethical dilemma that you're especially concerned about as AI is used more and more?
So, yes. I'll go back to the first example we were talking about. You know, it's being used for diagnostic care journeys today, even though it's not supposed to be, and there's all the warnings and the safeguards are trying to be worked around. But yeah, there's absolutely the potential where it's, you know, either sending someone to the emergency room who really doesn't need to go, or the opposite, and saying, oh, you're safe, you're okay, you really don't need to go. And fundamentally, this is one thing actually I'm really looking, hoping to study, is how has it really changed patient care journeys today? Where is it? How is that changing where people are getting fed into our healthcare system? And how can we put safeguards around that? And so there are huge kind of implications, ethical and just practical, for we need to kind of evaluate what these tools are doing and the impacts it's having on our system at large. I spend less time worrying about the artificial general intelligence and what that means. I'll let other people kind of focus on, you know, will AI, you know, take over the world and evolve and do crazier stuff, and much more practical on what are the actual implications today for how this is getting used. I think for clinicians, right, it's at some point, and certain people are going to use it as kind of a back end for decision making. And there's some worries that if the AI told me to do this, maybe I'm less likely as a clinician to second guess that work, and I just kind of take it at face value. And is that better or worse for patient care? You know, we don't know yet. And so I think we really need to think about what are the safeguards around an AI that's being done? How can we create more medically tailored AI where we know, have a better sense, not that we're ever going to have a perfect sense with these kind of complex models, on what those boundary conditions are and where the edge cases that things are happening. But I think we need to kind of have a more fine-tooth look at what's happening with these AI models as they get deployed for both the provider side as well as the patient side.
Well, what other advice would you give to healthcare leaders, especially hospital leaders, as they're thinking about incorporating technology in their business operations more and more?
Yeah, I think, you know, it's tough. And I think being the healthcare system leader is one of the toughest jobs. You have this huge organization, all of these competing needs, tough financial pressures. So it's really hard to think about taking the time and energy to make an investment in something that you might not see necessarily in this year, but really is coming to the years to come. And finding the right partners and companies who can help you get integrated quickly, are the right kind of cultural fit for your organization, and then can grow with you, to me, I think is going to be the most important thing. Because as you play it out, the health systems that integrate these technologies, again, I think starting on the operations side, starting eventually slowly to bleed over to the clinical side, will be the health systems that are providing the best patient care are growing and are doing so at a fraction of the cost. That is the future. And so figuring out what are the ways where you can kind of start to bring that back to, you know, the present and start to make those initial investments and things that really can build and compound over time. That's the way that I think about it.
Well, I think that wraps up our time here this afternoon, but thanks so much for taking some time to chat with me today. Some very big topics, and we didn't touch on whether Skynet is going to take over the universe, but, you know, but we'll have to leave that for another time, I suppose. But no, it's going to be really interesting to see how this technology is used and changes healthcare, but it's certainly going to be leading some big changes.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me, Ron.
Okay. Thanks so much for joining us. Take care. Thank you for joining Databook, a podcast presented by Chief Healthcare Executive, a brand of MJH Life Sciences. You can subscribe on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. For the latest news, analysis, and insights on healthcare, visit our website, chiefhealthcareexecutive.com. You can follow us on social media on LinkedIn and Twitter. I'm Ron Southwick, Senior Editor of Chief Healthcare Executive. Thanks again for joining us. Take care.